bottom of Nunavav Amad Beis, four lines from the bottom. So the Gemara says, Omer Matiran, O Ein Omer Matiran. The Gemara earlier on yesterday's daf was having a discussion regarding kernels of wheat that a farmer plants in the ground or throws in the ground. The question is, what is their status in various areas of halacha? And one area the Gemara tackles is based on the Gemara in Maseches Menachos, is how does this relate to the Karban Omer, which we offered yesterday, right, on Tez Zayin Nisan, the Karban Omer. So the question becomes, are those kernels now permitted to eat once the Karban Omer is offered, or not? Are they not covered by the Karban Omer? So the Gemara clarifies. Hei chidami. Ida ashrish tanina. Ida lo ashrish tanina. This nan. Im hishrishu kodem la omer, omer matiran. Vim lava surinat sheyavo omer haba. So the Gemara says, well, what exactly is the question here exactly? Because the Mishnah in Menachos spells out both scenarios. In other words, if the kernels had already taken root at the time the Karban Omer was offered, then they're certainly permitted to eat once the Karban Omer is offered. And if not, then you have to wait till the following year, to the following year's Karban Omer, in order to eat these kernels. So the Gemara says, no. Lo tzricham dechatzdenu vizarenu kodem laomer, v'asa leomer v'chalif ilavayu, v'lo ashrush kodem laomer mahu. I'm sorry, mahu leminkat umeichal minayu. Kaman deshadyon bechada dame visharinu omer, odilma batlinu agavara teku. The Gemara leaves as an unresolved suffix the following scenario. The guy goes ahead and he plants, he sows, he reaps, he harvests, and puts the kernels in the ground. The time for the Karban Omer comes and goes, but the kernels themselves do not take root in the ground until after the Karban Omer has already been offered. So the question becomes, how do you view these kernels of wheat? Do we look at them as if they are placed inside of a jug and therefore the Karban Omer permits them? Or perhaps we say no, that since they've been cast into the ground, we essentially view them as ancillary to the ground, and since they have yet to take root before the Karban Omer was offered, you have to wait until the following year's Karban Omer before you can consume those kernels. And the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chasa, Ba'i Rabbi Ami. O na'a ein lahem, bitul mekach yesh lahem, o ein lahem. So the Gemara raises the following question. There are certain things which we're going to discuss extensively on today's daf that are not subject to the prohibition of ona'a. For example, as we'll talk about as we go on, karka is not subject to ona'a. If you overcharge someone when you sell them land, so the regular laws of ona'a do not apply. We'll see by hektesh, by avadim, by shtarus, there are a number of areas of halacha based on psukim that are impervious to the prohibition of ona'a. The question is, what about bitul mekach? Bitul mekach has we've discussed also in the past, is the idea that if you overcharge someone by more than a sixth, it's such an egregious overcharge. You're overcharging them by a half, by a third, by a quarter. So then the entire transaction is considered null and void. The question is, are these two halachos interconnected? Anything where ona'a doesn't apply, do we also automatically assume that this, you know, extension of ona'a called bitul mekach also doesn't apply? Or perhaps no. Perhaps we can differentiate between the two and say that just because ona'a doesn't apply in certain cases, perhaps the extension of bitul mekach will apply. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Nachman, Hadar Amar Rav Chasa, Pashit Rabbi Ami, ona'a ein lahem, bitul mekach yesh lahem. The Gemara says unequivocally that just because ona'a doesn't apply in certain circumstances, but bitul mekach, this, you know, more egregious overcharge, is still going to apply. So the Gemara clarifies, what exactly was the context of Rabbi Ami's statement? Rabbi Yona Amar Ahekdeshos, Rabbi Yirmiya Amar Akarkos, Vitravayu Mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan Amru, ona'a ein lahem, bitul mekach yesh lahem. The Gemara has a machlokas between Rabbi Yona and Rabbi Yirmiya, exactly what the context of the statement was. Was this a reference to karka? Or was this a reference to items of hekdesh? But either way, the Gemara explains, Man da amar ahekdeshos kol shekin akarkos, Man da amar akarkos aval ahekdeshos lo, the Gemara explains as follows, that according to the opinion that says that the context of Rabbi Yochanan's statement and Rabbi Ami's statement was a reference to Hekdesh, that's the position of Rabbi Yona, meaning to say again, that just because Hekdesh is not subject to Onah, it doesn't mean that it's not subject to the more egregious Bitul Mekach. If you overcharge by more than a sixth, then the transaction is null and void. That's true even by Hekdesh. Rabbi Yona would argue that halacha is limited only to Hekdesh, hekdesh, but does not, I'm sorry, applies to hekdesh and certainly applies to karka as well. Meaning that if you overcharge by karka, yes, there's no ona'ah if the overcharge is less than a sixth, but if it's more than a sixth, then bitul mekach applies and the entire sale is null and void. However, if you take the approach of Rabbi Yirmiya, that the context of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Ami's statement was referring to karka, then that statement will be limited only to karka and will not extend to hekdesh. Why would we think to differentiate? The Gemara references a famous statement of Shmuel. The statement of Shmuel appears in several places in Shas, where he makes the following observation. Let's say I have an item of hekdesh that I want to redeem. The item itself is worth a mana. Mana is 100 dinar, and I want to pay only a pruta. So it's obviously, the pruta is obviously much less than the face value of the item I'm trying to redeem. But Shmuel says, nonetheless, if you pay that pruta, that item of hekdesh that's worth 100 dinar is now desacralized. It's now considered to be chulin. So the Gemara says that if you subscribe to Rabbi Yirmiya's understanding of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Ami, what you're saying is that this differentiation between Ona'ah versus Bitul Mekach applies exclusively to Karka, but not to Hekdesh, presumably because Rabbi Yirmiya subscribes to the statement of Shmuel that you can desacralize Hekdesh for much less than its face value. Again, that's way larger than the share of Ona'ah. It's much, much more than a sixth to say that an item is worth a mana and I'm only redeeming it for a pruta. So because of that statement of Shmuel, therefore Rabbi Yirmiya thinks that the statement of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Ami only applies to Karka and does not extend to Hekdesh. Okay, then the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. Tanan Hasa. Im Haya Kodesh Balmum Yatza Lechulin V'tzarech Lasos Lodalin. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah from a Seches Temura that makes the following observation. Let's say, for example, I have an animal that was designated as a karban. The animal happens to be a Balmum. So I want to go ahead and substitute that for an animal in other words, for a different animal as a karban. Normally, that's a prohibition of Temura. You're not allowed to swap out one animal as a carbon for another. So sorry, one second. I apologize, sorry about that. Okay, so again, so the Mishnah in Temura says that if I have an animal which was a karban that now became a balmum, and I then substituted for a different animal, thereby violating the prohibition of Temura, the original animal that's a balmum becomes chulin, it loses its status of kedusha, it's now considered desacralized. But the Mishnah also points out that you have to pay the difference in value between the blemished animal and the new animal that you're now supplying. Now the Gemara has a machlokas about what exactly this means. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, yatza l'chulin dvar Torah, v'tzarech lasos lo damim mi divrehem, v'reish lakish amar, av tzarech lasos lo damim min haTorah. And so again, everyone agrees that the notion that the original blemished animal becomes chulin, becomes desacralized when you swap it, when you substitute it for a new animal, everyone agrees that that's a din d'oraisa. The machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is that secondary halacha in the Mishnah Temura that I have to pay the difference between the original value of the previously consecrated, now blemished animal and the new animal. Is that a din d'oraisa or is that merely a din d'rabbanan? Rabbi Yochanan seems to say it's only a din d'rabbanan, and Reish Lakish assumes that it's a din d'oraisa. So the Gemara again clarifies. B'mai askinan. Ilema Bichdei Ona'ah, if the discrepancy in value between the original animal and the new one is within the measure of Ona'ah, it's within the shear of a sixth. Behal Lema Reish Lakish, Tzarech Lasos Lo Damim Dvar Torah. Can you tell me that Reish Lakish requires you to pay that difference in value, Mida Oraisa? Vehasnan, Elu Dvarim She'en Lahem Ona'ah, Hakarkaos Vehavadim Vehashtaros Vehahikdeshos. That position is not tenable because on yesterday's daf, the Mishnah told us explicitly that there are four things, as we alluded to earlier, that are impervious, that are not subject to the prohibition of Ona'ah, and they are Karka, Avadim, Shtaros, and Hekdesh. So clearly you see from here that Hekdesh is not subject to Ona'ah. So if the difference in value between the original animal and the new one that I substituted is less than the shear of Ona'ah, it's less than a sixth, so the Mishnah told us on yesterday's daf that Ona'ah doesn't apply to Hekdesh. So how could Reish Lakish possibly suggest that there's an obligation min haTorah to pay that discrepancy? So the Gemara says, you're right, Ela Bitul Mekach. Maybe you'll argue that the discrepancy in value is larger than a sixth. It's a discrepancy that normally would warrant the nullification of a transaction. The problem with that is, says the Gemara, Behalema Rabbi Yochanan, Tzarech Lasos Lo Damim Mi Divrayim. In other words, are you going to tell me that in a scenario where the discrepancy between the two animals is larger than a sixth, that Rabbi Yochanan merely requires you to pay that difference only Mi Durabana, that it's not a din d'oraisa? V'ha'amar Rabbi Yona Ahekdeshos, V'Rabbi Yirmiya Amar Akarkos, V'Travayu Mishmei D'Rabbi Yochanan Amrei, Ona Elohem, Bitul Mekach. Mishnah. We already established earlier in this Gemara, yes, there was a technical machlokes between Rabbi Yonah and Rabbi Yirmiyah about what the context, what the scope of the statement was, but whether it's a reference to Hekdesh or a reference to Karka, Rabbi Yochanan himself basically says that although it's true that Ona'ah doesn't apply in certain cases, whether it's Karka, whether it's Hekdesh, whatever the case is, but Bitul Nekach, the notion that if I overcharge you egregiously, that certainly does apply. So doesn't that indicate that Rabbi Yochanan certainly does subscribe to this notion of Bitul Nekach, and therefore it's very difficult to suggest that the obligation to pay the difference in value between the two animals should merely be a din de Rabbanan? Seemingly, that should be a din de Oraisa, according to Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says, you're right, Liola Bevitul Nekach, the epoch de Rabbi Yochanan, the Reish Lakish, the Reish Lakish, the Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara is a very simple suggestion, which is really what we just suggested is correct, that the discrepancy in value is egregious. It's more than a sixth. It's bitul nekach territory. And we simply have to reverse the opinions. And we have to say that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who requires you to pay the discrepancy midoraisa, and Reish Lakish says that it's only required midorabbanan. So again, the Gemara clarifies. B'mayka miflegei. B'dishmuel. D'amar Shmuel. Hek dishoveh mana shechilo shoveh pruta michulal. Mar isle dishmuel umar leisle dishmuel. The first answer in the Gemara, the first suggestion in the Gemara, is that the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, this newfangled version that we're now reversing the shitos, revolves around the statement of Shmuel that we cited earlier in the Gemara, which is, can I go ahead and desacralize a mana's worth or 100 dinars worth of hekdesh for a mere pruta? So, in other words, Reish Lakish would tell you that that act is considered valid, it's considered to be desacralized, therefore my obligation to pay the full discrepant value, it's only a din de Rabbanan, because mida oraisa, the item is already considered to be desacralized, and Rabbi Yochanan would disagree with that. Rabbi Yochanan would take issue with Shmuel's statement and say that no, that merely paying a pruta to desacralize a mana's worth of hekdesh is a meaningless act, you have to pay face value, and therefore the obligation to pay that discrepancy is still very much warranted min ha-Torah. So that's one way, that's one answer to resolve or to explain the nature of the machlokas. Iba yasema, the chule alma islahu de Shmuel. Or you can suggest, says the Gemara, that everyone subscribes to Shmuel's idea that simply paying a pruta is enough to desacralize a mana's worth of hekdesh. V'hacha b'hacha miflegei. Mar savar shechilalo in lechachila lo, umar savar afil lechachila. The second suggestion of the Gemara is to say that Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that although it's true that technically speaking, paying a pruta is sufficient bidyevet to desacralize a mana's worth of hekdesh, but that's only b'di'evet. L'chadchila, you're not supposed to do that. And Reish Lakish disagrees. Says, no, even l'chadchila, it's totally fine to do that. And then the third answer, the one says, Iba yasema, liola b'chdei ona, vilo tepach, uchid rav chista kamiflagei, da'amar, mai ein lahem ona, einan besoras ona. The third suggestion in the Gemara is that really we're talking about a case where the discrepancy in value between the original animal that's blemished and the new animal that you substituted is within the measure of ona. It's less than a sixth. It's not an egregious overcharge. And we don't have to reverse the shitas. We can go back to how we started. That Reish Lakish is the one who requires you to pay the difference min ha-Torah, and Rabbi Yochanan says that it's only required midrabana. What then did the Gemara mean when it said, ein lahem ona? That although, in other words, ona doesn't apply, but bitul mekach does, the Gemara says that means that einan betoras ona, meaning to say that the regular laws of ona don't apply here, namely that even if the discrepancy is less than a sixth, where normally the halacha is that when you have a discrepancy of ona less than a sixth, that's basically meaningless. It's assumed that the buyer forgives that discrepancy. That does not apply here. This case is actually, in a way, more stringent. Rav Chista assumes that the halacha here is more stringent, that we don't even allow you to invoke the leniencies that come along with ona'a, where normally if the overcharge is less than a sixth, that we allow you, we assume that the buyer waives that difference. We say, no, in this context, in this case, that is not going to apply. So asks the Gemara, Mesve ribis ve'ona'a lehejod ve'in ribis ve'ona'a lehekdesh, comes the Brisa and says that the prohibition of ribis and the prohibition of ona'a both apply to a regular person. If two individuals are involved in a business transaction, so of course there's the prohibition of ribis, of charging interest, and there's the prohibition of ona'a, but those two prohibitions do not extend to hekdesh. So that seems to undermine what Rav Chista just told us, because Rav Chista just told us a second ago that it doesn't mean that ona'a doesn't apply. It means, if anything, it's actually more stringent, that the leniencies of ona'a don't apply. And again, the Gemara says, no, mi alima mi masnisin de'okimna besoras ona'a, hachanami ribis vidin ona'a lehejon ve'in ribis vidin ona'a lehekdesh. The Gemara says we can just give the same answer that we just gave a second ago, the same reinterpretation that we gave for our Mishnah, namely that It doesn't mean that Onah itself doesn't apply, but rather the laws of Onah, the application of Onah, with which we're normally familiar, does not extend here. That even if the overcharge is less than a sixth, that would still be grounds to say that the transaction is nullified. So the Gemara says that in other words, the same thing here is true here as well, that the laws, the prohibitions of Ribis and Onah only apply to a regular individual, but they do not extend to Hektish. So asks the Gemara, Ihachi, Hainu Dikatani Seifa, Zechomer Behejo Mi Behektish, how do you explain the Seifa of the Brisa? The Seifa of the Brisa, when it's illustrating, when it's trying to draw a contrast between cases that involve regular people versus that of Hektish, the Seifa says, this is the stringency for a regular person over Hektish. But the question is, we just established that actually this stringency extends to Hektish as well. To which the Gemara says, no, a ribbis. That's specifically referring to the prohibition of ribbis. As we just established a second ago, the prohibition of ribbis only applies to a regular individual, not to Hektish. To which the Gemara then asks, listen, nami zechomer behektish mi behejon aona. So then why doesn't the Braisa also teach the reverse, namely, that this is the stringency that Hektish has over a hedgehog, over a regular person, in the context of Onah, and say, like Rav Chista just suggested, that Onah by Hektish is even more stringent than we thought. And by a regular person, at least if the overcharge is less than a sixth, we say, okay, whatever, we're going to be mochel. But by Hektish, we're going to throw the book at you and say, if the overcharge is, even if it's a 48th, we're still going to insist that, you know, that the transaction is null and void. To which the Gemara says, Hachi Hashta, Bishlama Zechomer Behejon Mi Behektish Vesulo, Ela Hektish Zechomer Vesulo. The Gemara says that textually, this interpretation doesn't hold water. Why not? Because it's one thing to say that this is the stringency that a Hedjot has over Hektish. Normally, in other words, just intuitively, we always assume that Hektish, of course, is going to be more stringent than a Hedjot. In other words, anything that involves Hektish is typically going to be much more severe than something which involves two regular individuals. So the fact that we found one area of halacha, which is a quirk, which is an exception to that, namely ribis, so that almost makes sense for the Braisa to set up this statement to say, this is the one stringency, this is the one area of halacha that a hedjot, that a regular person basically has a leg up on Hektish. The one area, when it comes to ribis, that we say that it's more stringent. But to say, in the context of Onah, to say, this is the one area that Hektish is more stringent than a hedjot, it's just not true, because Hektish basically is more stringent than a hedjot in every other way, with the one exception of ribis. So from a textual perspective, it's difficult for the Braisa to formulate it in this way, even though it's true that there is, that there is a scenario that Hektish is more stringent when it comes to Onah, as we just keep on pointing out, that an overcharge of less than a sixth is still problematic for Hektish as opposed to for a regular person. But in other words, it's difficult for the Braisa textually to say, this is the stringency of Hektish over a Hedjot, because there are many, many more stringencies that Hektish has over a Hedjot. Okay, then the Gemara says, Ribis the Hektish Heichidami. What exactly is the case of Ribis when it comes to Hektish? Again, we keep on pointing out that there is no prohibition of ribis for Hektish. So what's the case? What's the scenario that Hektish is impervious to the prohibition of ribis? So the Gemara explains, Ilema de Ozfe Gizbar Mea Bimea Viasrim. If the scenario is that the treasurer of Hektish lent, let's say, a person 100 zuz, in other words, let's say a money, and now he's getting back 120, which is like, you know, that's like a classic example of ribis. The problem is, asks the Gemara, Vahalo ma'al ha-gizbar, v'chevan shema'al ha-gizbar, yatsu ma'osav l'chulin v'havu l'hu de-hedjo. The problem is that once the gizbar, once the treasurer gives that money, he violates mi'ilah, and once he violates mi'ilah, the money becomes chulin, it becomes desacralized, it's no longer consecrated money, and therefore it's considered to belong to the hedjo, which means that the prohibition of ribis should in fact apply, because it just belongs personally to the gizbar, it doesn't belong to Hektish anymore. So the Gemara says, no, Amar of Hoshi, the first answer in the Gemara is that of Rav Hoshea, based on a Mishnah, where the Mishnah tells us in Masechet Shkalim, that let's say, for example, a person pledges to give a certain amount of flour, fine flour, as a donation to the Beis HaMikdash. And at the time that he made his pledge, it was, let's say, for example, the let's say four se'ah of fine flour went for a se'ah, and then there was some fluctuation in the market value. So the Mishnah in Shkalim tells us that if the market value fluctuates in either direction, let's say either it used to be four se'ah for a se'ah and now it's three, or it used to be three and now it's four, either the price of flour went up or down. In all these cases, the Mishnah in Shkalim says that Yad Hekdesh Al Ha'elyona, that Hekdesh always has the upper hand. You're always going to have to give them the higher valuation, whether that's the current market value or the previous market value. So the Gemara says that the first example in which we can say that ribis doesn't apply to hekdesh is this very specific circumstance where you pledge to give a certain amount of flour or of any item to hekdesh, and then there was a change in the market value where normally you would think, okay, isn't that a violation of ribis to give more or less than whatever I pledged? So we say, no, the ribis doesn't apply here. That, in other words, you give the higher market valuation. That's one application. Rav Papa Amar, Hacha Da'avni Binyan Hamesuros Legizmar Askinim, Kiddush Shmuel, Da'amar Shmuel, Bonin Bachol, Ve'achar. Another possible okimta, another possible application of this idea that ribis doesn't apply to hekdesh is in the following circumstance: when it comes to the bricks that were given over to the gizmar, to the treasurer of hekdesh, before they were really built into the construction of the various structures in the Beis Hamikdash. Because the Gemara tells us in Maseches Eruvin and Maseches Menachos this idea that basically that when the people were involved in building the structures for the Beis Hamikdash, they first built them as regular mundane bricks. They were not yet consecrated. They only consecrated them once the structures had already been completed. So at the time that the bricks are just sitting there, they had not yet been, you know, molded or fashioned into a structure used for the Beis HaMikdash, they did not have any Kedusha, and therefore they belong to the Gizbar. In theory, the Gizbar has the right to lend out those bricks and in theory could run into a scenario of ribis. So Rav Papa says, in that scenario, those bricks are not subject to the prohibition of ribis. That's what the Gemara means when it says that that ribis does not apply to hekdesh. Okay, then the Mishnah said, "Ing b'hen tashlumei kefel." Another exception to the various halachos that we referenced earlier, like karka and hekdesh and avadim and shtaros. One of the halachos that does not apply to those things is kefel. And normally, whenever you steal something, if you're a ganav and you get caught, you have to pay kefel. So that halacha breaks down in these areas of halacha. So the Gemara asks, "How do we know that kefel doesn't apply to karka, to avadim, shtaros, and to karka?" So the Gemara says, "Tisana Rabbanan, al kol dvar pesha klal, al shor al chamor al sal salma prat, al kol aveda asher yomar chazer v'chola." We're going to see the Gemara is going to basically quote this theme verbatim for another two or three times until the end of the daf. But the idea basically is the Gemara derives from a principle called klal prat uklal, a pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim that discusses the principle that the obligation to pay kefel if you're a ganav. The pasuk says, "I'll call dvar pesha for any matter of trespass." That's a very generalized statement. It just says anything that you do that's problematic. In other words, anytime you steal something, then the pasuk starts to get specific. "Al shor, al chamor, al sal, sama." If you steal some guy's ox, his donkey, his sheep, his garment, and then it says, "Al kol avida asher yomar for any lost ox." So that's another generalized statement. So the Gemara. So again, we have a famous principle called klal uprat uklal, and whenever you have a klal uprat uklal, the prat in the middle is always limiting or expanding or explaining the scope of the klal. So in other words, the things that are mentioned in the middle, the pratim that are mentioned in the middle of the pasuk and mishpatim, the two salient features that define them are that they're a davar hamitaltel, they're movable. In other words, they're not land, they're movable, and they're also gufo mamon, they have intrinsic value. So that excludes those four items that we keep on referencing. It excludes karka. Karka is obviously not mitaltelin by definition. It excludes avadim, because we know that avadim throughout shas are compared to karka. It excludes a shtar, because although a shtar is movable, but it doesn't have in other words, it doesn't have intrinsic value. A shtar, as we've discussed in the past, is merely representative value. An IOU that says that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000 is not worth $1,000. It's worth, you know, the 10 cents that the piece of paper is worth, but it represents the larger debt that is owed. And then finally, when it comes to hekdesh, the pasuk uses the term re'ehu. So re'ehu means that only interactions involving two regular individuals, that is always to the exclusion of hekdesh. Then the Gemara says, "Velo tashlumi dalav vehei my taima tashlumi dalav vehei amar rachamana velo tashlumi shlosha v'arba." So why are all of these halachos also impervious to dalav vehei? Let's say, for example, I stole an animal that belonged to hekdesh and then I sold it or I slaughtered it, so I'm also not chayav to pay dalav vehei. Why is that? Because the Gemara says that Dalet Vehei presupposes that there's also Kefil here. Dalet Vehei builds on Kefil. In other words, there's an idea that you pay Dalet Vehei, which includes the Kefil, but it can't be Gimel V'Dalet. It has to be Dalet Vehei. Meaning to say the following. In other words, when I steal an animal, let's say from a regular person, and then I sell it or slaughter it, so I'm paying Kefil. That's the first level up from the principal. And then in addition to that, I'm paying an additional either three or four times, depending on the type of animal, which is going to total Dalet or Hei. In other words, Dalet Vehei factors in the Kefil. But the Gemara just told us a second ago that Kefil doesn't apply to any of these instances, right? In other words, it doesn't apply to Hektesh or Takarka or Shtaros or Avadim. So once you've knocked Kefil out, by definition, you've also knocked out Dalet Vehei, because Dalet Vehei presupposes that there's also Kefil in the mix. Then the Mishnah says, Shomer Chinam Eino Nishba Menahanim. How do I know that a Shomer Chinam does not have to take a Shavua in any of these cases? Let's say, for example, you appointed someone as a Shomer Chinam to watch your animal that you consecrated for Hektesh, and then the animal, whatever, gets lost, or even let's say theory he's negligent. Normally a Shomer Chinam is chayev, or he has to take a shua that he was negligent. So in the case of Hektish, that's not going to apply. How do we know that? So the Gemara says, the son of Ravanan, ki yitain isha rayehu klal, kesef ochelim prat, and the girsa here should be vigunav mibesa ish lishmor, chazar v'chalal, klal ufrat uchlal yetadana elokeina prat, maha prat mefurash dover hamitalto v'gufo mamon, av kol dover hamitalto v'gufo mamon, yatsu karkos shein v'taltolin, yatsu avadam shok This is the second time the Gemara quotes this idea verbatim. It's another pasuk in Mishpatim, but it's the same idea. The pasuk in the context of the shvua of a shomer chinam, that a shvua hashomerim is only going to apply when the items that are in question are things that are movable and they're also gufo mamon. They're intrinsically valuable, which again excludes all these four items that we keep on alluding to. Then the Mishnah said, "No se sachar eno mishalim in the hanamile." What about when it comes to a shomer sachar? How do I know that a shomer sachar doesn't have to pay if the hektesh karka etc. gets stolen? The son of Rabbanan ki itain ishareyu klal chamoro shoro se prat v'chol behemal lishmor chazur chala klal ufrad uchlal yatadan ela keina prat ma prat mefurish dover hamital to v'gufo mamon afkol dover hamital to v'gufo mamon yatsu karkos shein metaltlin yatsu avadim shehukshu lekarkos yatsu shtaros she'af al pishem metaltlin ein gufon mamon hekdesho samar kra reyehu loshashus. This is the third time the Gemara quotes this again, basically verbatim. This is in the context of a shomer sachar, that a shomer sachar normally is chaya for gneva va'avida, but if the item he's watching happens to be karka in a kanani, a shtar, or whatever, or hektish, so then he's not going to be chayav again based on the same methodology of klal uprat uchlal, because all the items that are listed in the prat are things that are both movable as well as things that have intrinsic value. And finally, the Mishnah says shomer chinam eino nishba. So the Gemara says again, we just established a second ago that a shomer chinam does not take a shvua on matters of hektish or things of that nature. So the Gemara now questions this. The Mishnah in Shkalim illustrates the following. Let's say it's the time of year where the machatzis hashekel was collected, and there were various emissaries, messengers that were sent out to go and collect the machatzis hashekel from various communities, and then the messenger is claiming that the money that he was given, that he was entrusted with to bring up to the Beis HaMikdash, was either stolen or lost. So the question now becomes, what do you do now? So the Mishnah says, im mishen nisrima hatruma nishba'in lagizbarim. So if the Trumas Halishka, if the chamber in which the money was stored has already taken out the money, and they've already started to purchase Karbanos Tzibor, so now the Shaliach has to take a Shua to the Gizbarim, to the treasurers of Hektesh, swearing that they were not responsible, that it was lost, it was stolen, it wasn't their fault. However, if the Trumas Halishka has yet to be allocated, they have not yet taken the money out of the communal funds to purchase the Karbanos, then the shvua is directed at the people of the community from which they collected the money, and those people are going to have to supply another machatzis hashekel. And in fact, the Mishnah says, "Nimtu osha hechazirim haganavim." If the money is either found or the thieves are caught, eluva elu shkalim. In both the original coins and the new coins have the status of machatzis hashekel. However, ve'ein olim lohem l'shana haba, but they cannot be used for the following year. So you see clearly from this Mishnah in Maseches Shkalim that a shomer does have to take a shvua on items that pertain to Hektish. So in the Gemara tomorrow, we're going to try to answer, try to resolve the answer to this question.